This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. This is the first show of 2014, and this is pretty exciting. I'm going to be talking about Web 2.0 tools, thought leadership, content. My guest is probably one of the most qualified people in the universe to address these topics. Paul Gillen has been the senior editor at Ziff, executive editor and editor-in-chief at Computer World, VP and editorial publisher at TechTarget, and Paul was there when TechTarget launched, so he knows how to create and disseminate content virtually, not necessarily from a print platform. And for the past 8 years or so, you've been principal of Paul Gillen Communications. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure.
I forgot to mention four books. Two of my favorite social media books, New Influencers and Secret of Social Media Marketing from the mid to late 2007-2008. You know, for some reason, Paul, I miss social media or social marketing to the business customer, and Wiley's my publisher, too. So
well,
I'm pissed.
It did okay.
I'm pissed that I missed it.
They gave it pretty good support, but I think one of the things that I learned from titling that book, Social Marketing to the Business Customer, because it's a book about B2B social media marketing, is that the title was confusing.
Yeah.
We thought we were being cute with the title. But then another book came out, a very good book, called the B2B Social Media Book, that did very well. And I thought, wow, those guys, they called a spade a spade. And that's really what you need to do in the book publishing world. Don't confuse people with a fancy title.
Well, you did that in your last book, which I believe you self published, Attack of the Customers.
I did. Yeah, that was it was what it said. The customers are revolting. The customers are now learning to use their new empowerment, their tools, all these social media tools that they have to self organize and crusade against brands and government agencies and causes that make them angry, and it's very empowering, and it's kind of scary if you're a brand.
Let's start there. It's scary because if you're a brand, if you don't respond, I mean, how do you deal with this?
Well, you have to keep it in perspective and understand that customers are attacking all the time now. I mean, we hear about these things. You hear on a daily basis about sort of virtual flash mobs that form over some perceived social injustice or a customer is mistreated, and the fact is, in some industries, this happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Customers are angry all the time. If you go to the Facebook page of UPS, FedEx, DHL, any of those large delivery services, and look at the customer comments, they're almost all negative. People are just griping and complaining because those companies perform miracles for a living, right? They ship stuff around the world overnight. It's amazing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to get it right every time. There are going to be some problems. And now people have a way to go and share their problems in public. But what those companies do, I think, is understand in context that we have isolated situations that we have to deal with, and we will deal with them one-on-one. And they do that very well. Now, the bigger problem for companies is when something blows up out of nowhere. So you have, and we've been hearing a lot about misfired tweets lately. A company posts a tweet. This just happened, I think, last week. A company tried to take advantage of the Nelson Mandela.
Oh, yeah. I read about that.
To promote a product, and they got hell for it. And that's really an example of think before you talk. The fact that you can speak now doesn't mean you should. Think of the consequences of what you're going to say. And the bigger a brand you are and the more controversial your industry, the more careful you need to be about what you say. So companies that that play games with people, that try to fool them, that spam them, that are deceptive, are not going to last very long. Those are not sustainable business practices these days, because people talk to each other and they out companies that aren't transparent with them. So if that's the way you do business, you're going to get in trouble. But if you genuinely value your customers, you treat them well, you put them first, you're not going to run into big crises. The problems are going to be manageable.
Right, and burn victims are about 100 times more likely to talk about things than people who are happy or relatively happy.
Well, and there's one statistic that that Dell shared with me. Dell has been doing this for years, and they have very, very sophisticated metrics on customer complaints. And they say that more than 95% of angry customers, people who are complaining on Twitter or Facebook, whatever, in a public forum, more than 95% can be satisfied simply with a conversation. But more amazingly is more than 40% of those people become raving fans.
Yep.
So people are surprised when you actually reach out to them and say, hey, what's the problem? Can we help? Sorry, you know, let's try to fix this. And they're delighted, and they become your fans. So which really goes against the conventional wisdom of how companies have operated, which is don't talk about this stuff, right? Sweep it under the rug. Don't pay attention to the critics. If you do pay attention to the critics, you're actually going to get more. More happier customers out of that experience.
Yep, I'm 100% behind that. let's migrate, though. I want to talk. And the main reason you're here, I want to talk about social media that was hot in 2013, what to look for in 2014. But let's start with established social media, and let's start with the three biggies for social networking: Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. For the B2B company, for the B2B marketer, for the B2B business development salesperson, give me your rundown on each of the platforms.
Well, for Facebook, my advice would be don't spend a lot of resources on Facebook unless you have a large and very enthusiastic customer base. So, for example, the email marketing companies do well on Facebook. Intel does well on Facebook. Companies that have very large markets and whose customers are enthusiastic, as you know, technology people can be about computers or about having the fastest processor. Those companies do pretty well on Facebook because they can energize the community to talk amongst themselves. And what I think B2B marketers have discovered about Facebook is that this is a conversation medium. It's a place to get people started talking, get them talking to you, get them talking to each other. But don't get too heavy. Don't get too serious. Okay, it's a place to have fun, really.
Okay.
And some B2B companies are using Facebook very well. For most B2B companies, Facebook, I think, is not worth the investment, because they're too serious. Their business is too serious. It doesn't lend itself to Facebook's kind of freewheeling atmosphere. Now, Twitter is very successful for B2B marketers. Continues against really all logic to be an enormous source of traffic and even leads. And I think that's because Twitter is used by technology enthusiasts and media people. So if you are trying to reach the media, Twitter is a good place to do it. If you have a niche business, Twitter is good because it's easy to find people who are in that niche. And Twitter search makes it very easy to do that. Twitter lists are a great resource for finding people who share interest in a niche. And the fact is, the cost in terms of time of participating in Twitter is not all that great. You know, you can do it for 10, 15 minutes a day and be successful. LinkedIn, I mean, this was the breakout year for LinkedIn. There's no question, both in terms of the company's market capitalization, which is over $25 billion now.
Holy crap.
Yeah, really. Its user base, which I think is about to hit 250 million.
No, I think it's closer to 275 now.
Okay, well, it's growing faster than I thought then. And its utility. And you know, Bob Metcalfe, the inventor of Ethernet, is famous for saying that the value of a network is the square of the number of nodes on the network. And I think that's very true for LinkedIn. As you get over 250 million members, you have this enormous value of all of these people. You have to be on LinkedIn now if you're a business professional. It's become a search engine for business pros. The community discussion forums are very active, and really in many industries, the number one most active place to find professional discussion is on LinkedIn.
1.9 million groups.
And some of them are just extraordinarily active. Many of those groups, there are many groups with over 100,000 members on LinkedIn and over 1,000 active discussions.
Yep.
So you've got, and the company is very strong and very focused. So it's strong financially, but it is focused on providing an excellent forum for its members. LinkedIn, for example, has never really built a third-party ecosystem of application providers. It's never opened up its database. It wants to make to provide the greatest value for its members, and I think its focus has been fantastic. And it's got a terrific business model. Three different revenue streams contribute to that solid financial footing, and it's almost impregnable now in terms of the barriers to entry. I mean, no one is going to come along and be better than LinkedIn and beat LinkedIn at what it does now. So, and for B2B marketers, LinkedIn is the number one most effective social network. Multiple research studies have demonstrated that. It's almost the inverse of the consumer market, and that's because B2B business professionals go to LinkedIn to get work done.
Okay, let's pick that up after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can find Paul, by the way, at Gillen, Gillin.com. I suggest you do so. That's where you can find his blog, which is all about B2B marketing. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Paul Gillen. Paul has an extraordinary career as an IT journalist and editor and my favorite columnist in B2B Magazine, which has been folded into Advertising Age, unfortunately. And stupid people didn't take Paul with them. So read Paul's blog at Gillen.com. Paul, let's pick up on LinkedIn again. I am a huge proponent of LinkedIn for the business-to-government market, and you indicated that 2013 was really the year. The tipping point for us was when the government loosened up the social media engagement rules in late 2010, 2011 for federal employees, and their migration into LinkedIn since then has been extraordinary. But you know, my argument for most people is that we're not going to be experts in multiple platforms, so pick the one where your audience is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the most common mistake that B2B companies make, particularly smaller B2B companies, is they spread themselves too thin. So it's like the shiny bauble syndrome. They want to be on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, and they have one person in the marketing department who does this part-time. And so they wind up with these very scraggly presences on these different social networks, and the lack of activity looks bad. And that's why I agree with you, Mark. Pick one and do it well, because you want to look like you have a healthy presence on social network, not a vestigial one. LinkedIn is one thing to remember about LinkedIn is it is the only social network that does not enable people to participate in discussions as companies. And I think that's remarkable. I think it's a tribute to LinkedIn's focus. You must participate in LinkedIn as a person when you're in the community groups. And that's very important because LinkedIn really boils down the business relationship to people interacting with people. It's not brands interacting with brands. So if you're going to have a presence on LinkedIn, you want to encourage the smart people, the innovative people, the people with good ideas, people with a lot of domain expertise, to do the talking for you because they really are going to represent your brand there.
I agree. And, you know, the exposure that you can get out of this platform is going to lead into things that we'll be talking later on, but your ability to share content, your own or others, your ability to develop a thought leadership or subject matter expert position really grows exponentially when you focus in on targeted communities, the groups that are most germane to you on LinkedIn.
And when you approach it with the mindset of, I'm here to help. Okay, I'm not here to sell, I'm here to help.
Add value.
That's really difficult, particularly for people in a marketing function, because marketing is a sales, part of the sales department. It is a function that's traditionally been about delivering a message, and that doesn't work in communities. I call this give to get.
Yep.
The more you give, the more you get. It's a pay it forward kind of approach. If you go in with the idea that I'm really going to help this community and help other people, then it will work for you. The good stuff will come back to you. If you approach it with the idea of I'm going to sell, you're going to get shut down.
There you go. I could spend couple hours talking about LinkedIn, but I want to cover a bunch of other things too. New and emerging platforms. It's new to me, probably not to my son, who's 16, but Pinterest, Snapchat, and then Google Plus. And I know Google Plus has been around for almost 4 years now too, but give me your take on this for B2B.
In order, Pinterest. If you're in a visual business, it's good. You don't even have to be in a visual business. Pinterest has very good search visibility. It doesn't shut out Google as many social networks do. Where I've seen B2B companies use it effectively is they post all of their content on Pinterest they find some sort of image to use, because Pinterest is an image sharing service. They find some sort of image to use to sort of sneak the URL in there. So they get the benefit of the search visibility, but you have to have an image associated with it. It's not for everyone. Companies that do it well, GE does a great job. IBM is very good on Pinterest. Constant Contact, email marketing company, excellent Pinterest presence. So there are some very good B2B companies there, but it's really pretty niche, and I would say, for most B2B marketers, probably not a good investment.
The Constant Contact thing is intriguing, though, because they are an email company. You don't really think of that as a visual type presence.
No, you don't. But I look at Constant Contact, I look at Quicken the same way. These are companies that I think have a brilliant approach to their markets, which is they don't see themselves. Constant Contact is not an email marketing company. Constant Contact sees itself as a marketing resource for small businesses.
Yeah.
Much as American Express does with its open forum. And so they go at social media with the idea of we're here to help make small businesses successful with their marketing. And it doesn't matter whether it's email or something else. So they find ways to use Pinterest to find different angles, different niches of that equation, and to express it visually using Pinterest. I think it's very smart. Intuit does the same thing. Intuit sees itself as a champion of small businesses. And that's really, its mission is bigger than just selling Quicken or TurboTax. Pinterest, I think not for most B2B marketers. Snapchat, not for any B2B marketers.
Snapchat would have worked for Anthony Weiner.
Well, Snapchat actually plays to, is aimed at the teen market, and it's aimed at a problem that a lot of teens have, which is they don't want their information to be visible to others for very long, certainly not to their parents. And they don't want embarrassing stuff to be up there. Now, a very interesting study just came out about a week ago on Facebook showing a substantial decline in teen use of Facebook. And I think this is because their parents are there. Facebook has become such a mainstream, adult network that I think the teens are moving elsewhere. And Snapchat has been a popular destination for them because it is a text messaging type of metaphor, and because things disappear. So you don't leave trails which can come back to haunt you. I think many teens are nervous about that. Not for B2B, not a place to be.
Okay.
Google Plus, very interesting. When is Google Plus going to break out? Well, some people would say Google Plus has already broken out. Over 500 million active users, somewhere near a billion total users. But some of those numbers are, those are funny numbers, because Google, if you have a Google account, you're automatically a Google Plus member. Doesn't mean that you use it. Now, some people swear by Google Plus and say it is the cornerstone of their marketing strategy. Most people I know would not say that. It's very popular with media and the social media crowd. I would say that if you're in construction or professional services or retail, you're probably not seeing much action from Google Plus.
What about IT?
It's good for IT. It's good for IT because it tends to attract a technical crowd. Google Plus is very sophisticated technologically. It's a lot. You can play around in Google Plus all day with all the features it has. So I think if technology interests you, it's kind of an intriguing place to be. The thing about Google Plus, two important points about Google Plus. One is that this is strategic to Google. And Google doesn't say that about many things, but it has said since the beginning that Google Plus was a long-term strategic centerpiece of its integration strategy. It's not a Facebook killer. It never has been a Facebook killer. In fact, in many ways, I think Google Plus competes more against LinkedIn than it does against
Facebook. Well, I would say the same thing, but I think it's trying to straddle both communities.
Well, it certainly is both a consumer and a business forum. But if you look at where the action is on Google+, where there's a lot of activity and where people say they're getting value, I have never heard a consumer company say that. Maybe I'm missing something, but whenever I hear people rave about Google+, it's always people who are trying to reach a business audience.
Okay.
And so I think it's important to know. It's also important to know that that search, Google has said since the very beginning, that the more you interact on Google+, the better it will be for your search rankings. So if you do content marketing, if you publish in a lot of places right now, you want to take, there are steps that you need to take to tell Google, hey, when I publish on these four different blogs, I'm the same person, and I'm going to be, and you should know who I am so that you can factor that into your search results. Also, another very important benefit of Google+, which is that if you have a Google+ page and someone searches for you on Google, they will get your Google+ profile at the top right, you know, front end, right at the top of the page, and there's Google search results. You can put links there. You can put profile information. You can put offers. Now, when you consider what you would pay to put an offer at the top of Google search results, if you're on Google+, you get that for free now when people search on your company name. So what would you pay to give people three offers at the top of Google search results? You can get that for free now. So I think that any B2B company should have a Google+ presence, if only because it's so good for your search visibility.
Okay. We're going to migrate to some other traditional platforms when we come back after these breaks. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Paul Gillen. Paul is a B2B marketing strategist, one of the best, if not the best, social media B2B guy. He's number one when you look up B2B social marketing.
Social media expert.
Social media expert on Google, number one. So pay attention to this guy. Find him at Gillen, GILLIN.com, or find him on LinkedIn. Paul, traditional email and traditional websites. What's going on here?
Well, excuse me. Traditional email, it continues to have amazing resilience. In fact, there was a study by the CMO Council this year that said companies spent 20% of their marketing budgets on email in 2013. In 2014, they're expected to spend up to 30%.
Wow.
So this email is not only alive and well, it's actually growing. And I think that's because of the way we work. I mean, for most people in a business setting, the email box is the center of their day. And if you can get into that email box, once you have a relationship with a person through an email subscription, that's kind of special, right? That's a relationship that you can't get through any other medium. It's a permission to actually, you know, enter their personal space. So I think email is being understood as a complement to other channels, many, many other channels that have emerged over the last 8 years or so. Email sort of ties it all together. You can take a lot of your social activities, your videos and your Facebook posts and your blogs and such, and you can tie it together with email in a way that delivers a succinct package to the customer. So I think companies are just getting much better about understanding how to use email, about how to write good subject lines, about how to send at the right time of the day, about how to use offers. So it continues to perform well. In fact, a lot of traditional marketing is alive and well. Telemarketing is doing just fine. Webcasts, 15 years we've had webcasts now. They continue to be a booming market. So social is not knocking anything really off the off the charts. It tends to complement other electronic media that were already in place. What's happening with company websites? Well, HTML5 is one big thing. Mobile-enabling websites is very important, and I think you've got. I don't have statistics at the tips of my fingers, but in some markets now, we are seeing access to company websites. Almost half of those accesses are coming from mobile devices,
right.
And that's only going to be growing. If you have a website that is not mobile enabled now, you're missing the boat because people are not able to reach your content. People are going to simply click away when they get to that that tiny little type on your website. I think that websites are becoming more, it was thought at one point, or it was conventional wisdom to say that websites are going to go away. Everyone, the Facebook page is going to become the website of the future. That hasn't happened, and it's not going to happen, because you still need a home. You still need a place that you can send people, that you can control, where you have full control, full accountability, full metrics, and you can understand what people are doing there. And I'd say what's really going on in websites, Mark, is what's going on in the back end, which is marketing automation and metrics and understanding at a very granular level of detail what people do when they get to your websites, to your landing pages, what drives them to become a lead, to convert, to become a customer, and how you do more of that. And websites are getting better. Just as social networks are getting better, websites are getting better as well. So they're going to be around for a long time. The trick is, with your own website, to have really good insight on what's happening there when people arrive.
Okay. So now I know that you use WordPress as a primary tool. Now, is that now your homepage as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I use WordPress for, I have five or six websites that I maintain, and they're all on WordPress. WordPress, I have seen statistics, powers about 40% of commercial websites now, and it is growing. WordPress is getting better. It's releasing newer versions faster. There is a huge community of plugins and extensions, and WordPress, which started out really as a very simple kind of blogging platform, is now powering some very large and popular websites, news websites, because people have found ways to extend this platform with all kinds of, of amazing features. So I think if you're starting a website these days, WordPress is kind of the default for new websites, because simply of, I mentioned earlier that the value of a network being the square of the number of users. The more people use WordPress, the more third-party plugins are written and extensions, the more templates are written, the more value the WordPress platform acquires. So it's my default. Now, I'm not saying that there are not others. Certainly, if you're doing very sophisticated database work, if you have very large numbers of records, if you have e-commerce transactions that you're running through your website, you're probably going to want to look at other platforms that are tuned for that purpose. But for basic content publishing, WordPress is outstanding.
And content publishing is where we're going to take the entire last segment, because content and thought leadership are all tied into what I like to discuss with, particularly with small businesses: differentiation, standing out, developing that subject matter expert platform, etc. But you do that through, well, you've done it for the last 8.x years when you started your own company. You had created a following through your various editorial positions, and your name recognition is huge in certain circles, particularly technology circles.
Thank you.
But, well, I mean, it's deserved. You got four excellent books out, three that I've actually read, one that I'll get Wiley to send me.
I'll send you that one, Mark. No problem.
Okay. Well, then I don't have to bug Peter. Your WordPress platform, your ability to put out fresh information on a regular basis, what kind of feedback are you getting through there?
Well, I'm a writer, and So content marketing is sort of very natural for someone who does what I do. Now, a lot of people are not comfortable writers. They're not, they're not good writers. And for them, it might be another medium that's useful for them. But I sort of have a natural proclivity to share things that I learn. And I think that's important to understand about when it comes to content marketing. You know, we hear the most common complaint that we hear from B2B marketers about content marketing is they don't have ideas. They don't have enough material. We can't come up with enough good stuff to keep, you know, to keep stoking the fire. And I think the best way to approach that is share by default. So, what I've said about writing books is that for me, writing a book is simply a process of sharing what I've learned. So I go into writing a book without really knowing a lot about the topic. And then over the course of several months of intensive study, I learn a lot of stuff, and I share that in the form of a book. But you don't have to do that as a book. You can also do it on a blog. You can do it on Google+. You can do it as a video series. You can do it in SlideShare. There are all kinds of different ways that you can express the process of learning. And then there's the basic basic developing that reflex that when you see something interesting, you share it with a lot of other people. You know, how many times do you take a link? Do many of us take a link and put it in an email? We send it to a short list of people.
The first thing I do when I find it, and after I say this, we're going to take a break. The first thing I do when I find something interesting is look for that share button, and I post it in my groups on LinkedIn.
Right, because it's dead simple to do that, and then yep. A lot of other people have a chance to see it.
Yep. We're going to take our final break here. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Paul Gillen. Find him at Gillen, GILLIN.com. I suggest you do so. You have an RSS feed at the blog, right?
Sure thing.
There
yep.
You go. So I click on that. Get it. It's well worth reading on a regular basis. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Paul Gillen. You can find, go to Amazon, type in Paul Gillen, GILLIN, and I would strongly suggest that you have a couple of these books in your business library. New Influencers, 2007, Secrets of Social Media Marketing, 2008. Slightly dated because they aren't talking about a lot of things, but the concepts, the core is still basically the same. So get them in your library, and don't just let them sit on the shelf. Read them, Paul. Let's jump into a little deeper discussion on this content thing: the forms of content, the types of content, where it fits. Just download.
Well, one of the I was saying 6 years ago that I used to have a slide in my presentations 2006, 2007 that said, you are the media. And I think that message is finally really resonating with businesses.
In took
fact,
a while.
I saw a number, and I wasn't the only one who said that. Tom Peremski, who writes Silicon Valley Watcher, said all companies are media companies. The idea is that we now have the capacity to do what strictly was the domain of media companies for 300 years. Now anybody can be a media company. Anybody can publish media cheaply and easily to a global audience, and that's amazingly empowering. So what's happened now is that marketers have really glommed onto this because, of course, just delivering messages doesn't work very well anymore. You have to engage the audience, which means you have to give them something that interests them. Stat I just saw this morning, 71% of B2B marketers use content marketing for lead generation. Number I saw a couple of weeks ago, more than about 90% of content marketers, B2B marketers, are going to increase their investments in content marketing during the next year. You know, this is a freight train right now. And it's because people now, the whole buying equation has shifted. It was for a long, long time. Buying was the process of intercepting people, what Seth Godin calls interruption marketing. Intercepting them when they were doing something else and trying to get their attention. Really not a very good way to sell something when you think about it. Now people have so much more choice. They can block out interruption. You have to engage them, which means you have to interest them. So if you can get them to come to you as an interested prospect, they are much more likely to convert into a sale than if you sort of annoy them into signing up for something. So content marketing plays in this idea that we can all be media companies. And we're seeing some very interesting examples. Now, in the consumer realm, I would look at what Coca-Cola is doing with a site it launched in 2013 called Coca-Cola Journey, which is, its company website, not the Coca-Cola.com, but the Coca-Cola company website, is now a lifestyle magazine. And they are hiring professional journalists, and they are writing a lot of content, and photo content, video content about different aspects of, you know, where to take a vacation and extreme sports and all the types of things that you would read in consumer magazines. You know, when Coca-Cola makes that kind of investment, that says something. Now, in the B2B realm, Cisco remade its newsroom in 2012 into the Cisco Network. It's hired on a freelance basis a bunch of former Business Week, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Fortune reporters, people who very good journalists who have been laid off from those publications,
mm-hmm.
and they're writing big picture think pieces for Cisco now. They're not advertising Cisco. They're not pushing Cisco products. They're writing really good stuff that will interest people who would also be good Cisco customers. Intel is doing the same thing. We are seeing this is happening across the board now, to greater or lesser extent, with B2B companies realizing that the skills that they have, the knowledge that they have in-house, that has been buried in the depths of their organization for years, is now their most valuable asset. Because your skilled practitioners, your people, your knowledge experts, your domain experts, are the people who are most likely to connect with your customers. And they're finding ways to sort of unearth these people, unearth all of this knowledge, and display it in a way that can create a more engaging relationship with the prospects and the customers.
Okay, now you're talking about using journalists and such. Freelancers and ghostwriters have been available for a while. But what about the other forms of content? You know, Google bought YouTube, I believe, because YouTube was number two on the search engine, not simply because it was a disseminator of you know, virtually any type of moving picture out there. I think they obviously strategic buy, but what other kinds of content are really hot for B2B?
Well, I think video is getting very hot for B2B, and there's a perception that B2B video has to be boring. You know, if you believe that, just go to Adobe's channel on YouTube and look at some of the stuff Adobe is doing. It's terrific. It's funny. It's engaging. It's like TV commercials, but they're done for the web. I just saw a video this morning that was done by Volvo Trucks, of all companies, right?
Right.
Big B2B. That's a B2B play.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jean-Claude Van Damme doing his famous split between two Volvo trucks traveling on the highway. A real thing. Not trickery. Real
right.
thing.
Yeah.
66 million views in a month and a half.
Holy crap.
Most successful B2B video I've ever seen. I think B2B companies are getting very creative about realizing that you can engage the audience as people, and you can get the same kind of gut-level effect that you do with B2C. There's a point I want to make here, Mark, that's really important. I'm glad you mentioned this. A study done by Google and the CMO Council about 2 months ago came out, found that personal factors were significantly more important in B2B buying decisions than they are in B2C buying decisions. And what I mean by that is that people put personal reasons, place much more emphasis on personal reasons to make decisions in B2B scenarios. Now, that flies in the face of what we would think. We think B2B buying is all about, it's all about numbers and specs and value for the dollar and all that stuff, and it is. But ultimately, people are making decisions, very important decisions for their company. And if you're buying a truck, if you're buying a fleet of trucks for Ryder, your career depends upon making the right decision. That's a very personal decision. So your comfort level with the companies that you do business with is very, very important. And this is something that B2B marketers often overlook. These are career-defining choices that many of their customers are making. So you need to understand customers at a very basic psychological level, not just give them numbers, but understand what motivates them, what makes them tick, what makes them happy, what do they worry about, what keeps them up at night, what makes them feel successful, what gives them acceptance by their peer group. These are not speeds and feeds. These are people making decisions. And I think we're going to find this with content marketing, that the secret to success in content marketing is understanding your buyer at a psychographic level, not a demographic level.
You've got to engage.
You've got to interest people, and this is the challenge that I think ultimately, you know, content marketing, the biggest challenge it presents is you've got to be interesting, and if you've got to find ways to be interesting, and a lot of B2B companies don't think they're very interesting, and I would differ with that. You know, I think there are lots of ways to be interesting. There's a company that has a Twitter feed. It's called, I believe, FMK Fasteners. Ann Handley from Marketing Props turned me on to this one. They've got a Twitter feed that's hilarious. There's a company that makes screws.
Yeah.
Right? You can't imagine a more prosaic industry, but they have a lot of fun with the fact that they make screws.
You know, there's a company that makes absorbent products, New Pig Corporation out of Tipton, PA. Classic example, same thing.
Right. Find different ways. Put your product in a different context and have fun with it.
Yep.
I love the Cree lighting, which makes LED lighting. Finds ways to put an incandescent light and an LED light on two chocolate bunnies and film them for 4 hours, and you saw the one on the incandescent light melted into a puddle, and the LED light didn't move at all. It's just simple, cheap, effective, and it just creative. So Brian Solis, you know, I asked Brian Solis once, he's a great social media guru at Altimeter Group, and I said, what do you do if you make hammers? You know, how does a company that makes hammers be interesting? And he said, you have to look at it as not making hammers. You have to look at it as building beautiful things.
There you go.
How are you going to, you're helping people build beautiful things. And once you define yourself in that context, all of these new worlds of creativity open up to you.
Bingo. We're going to have to wrap it on that. Paul, thank you so much again for joining me. It's been too long, and it will not be that long until the next time.
Well, I love talking about this, Mark. You bring out the best. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is not my day job. If your company needs to maximize the power of LinkedIn or ensure that your government marketing program is paying major dividends, we need to talk. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.